Welcome to Pulp Tales, fascinating stories of the pulp magazines and the creative minds that brought them to life. The fictioneers, the artists, the editors, and others. Brought to you by the PulpNet. Learn more about the pulp magazines through articles, blogs, bibliographies, links, over 100 episodes of this podcast, and much more at the PulpNet. Your link to the pulp magazines for almost 30 years. Online at ThePulp.net.
Bloodline is a very important concept in Edgar Rice Burroughs' writings. He was definitely a believer in nature over nurture, and that's what Tarzan showed.
In this episode of Pulp Tales, Kathy Wilbanks, Vice President of Operations at Edgar Rice Burroughs Incorporated, and longtime fan Bernice Jones, discuss the great men that Edgar Rice Burroughs brought to life in novel after novel. This presentation was part of ERB Fest, held in conjunction with Pulp Fest 2025. This Pulp Tales was recorded in Pittsburgh on Thursday, August 7th, 2025. Bernice begins.
We have the honor and joy of kicking off not only Pulp Fest, but ERB Fest. And tonight we will be talking about Edgar Rice Burroughs and the ideal man. If any of you guys were here last year, you know that we covered the women of Edgar Rice Burroughs. So we're just kind of giving the guys a little bit of time. So,
from a woman's perspective, that is.
From a woman's perspective, yes, very much so.
So this question has been pondered for centuries by a lot of philosophers. What does it mean to be an ideal man or male? Well, we did a little bit of research just to kind of get an idea. And the thing is we wonder, is it just an answer that comes from your own perspective? Does it depend on who's asking the question? Does it depend on what's going on in society? What's the backdrop? What's your own personal experience with your role models? There's a lot of factors that go into it. So I know based on some of the research we did, we came up with a couple of conceptions of what an ideal man, what the main goal of that whole concept is, and that is to reach beyond human details to develop a greater excellence. And I think the main thing in order to achieve that main goal is to look at the virtues involved in creating that final realization. So, that being said, we're going to go on and we're going to talk about ERB.
Do you think he thought he had traits of the ideal man?
No.
Alrighty then.
Maybe. Yeah. But I know that given his experience, he had some ideas and thoughts on what that meant. And whether he actually thought about it or whether he just subconsciously created these heroes based on the experiences that he had in his life is the main question. So we want to go ahead and explore that a little bit.
Yeah.
Many of you know that he was born in 1875, passed away in 1950. And given that time frame, we ask about his environment and what were his... Okay. Hello. What were his influences and what was it like for him? What was going on in the world and who were his heroes at that time?
And go ahead. Big issue at the beginning of the 20th century, and this is the elite folks, so basically the rich white guys sitting in their offices, what they were very concerned about, one of many things, was something called degeneration. What happened was it was early 20th century America. It was a time of expansion. It was a time of imperialism. Well, we're taking over land left and right. England was, you know, everybody was. There was a lot of industrial growth. So there were people doing different jobs. There was different paradigms for work. And then the youth, see if this is familiar, guys. The youth had more leisure time. So, you know, they had too much time. And many of the young men were soft, effete, really couldn't help themselves out of a paper bag, even though they tried, yes. But so they were degenerating, and they weren't going to be the big burly American men that we needed to move forward in the century. So that was a concern, and it shines through some of ERB's work, and we will get to that in a few minutes. But Edgar Rice Burroughs actually had an ideal man right there, right in front of him, Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt was a very sickly child. He could barely get out of bed many times. He was very, very ill. But he managed to get himself out of bed and pulled himself out, made himself into a strong man who spent a lot of time in the outdoors. He loved doing that sort of thing. So that would be one role model that he would have had, would have been Theodore Roosevelt.
Correct. Another one would have been his father.
His dad, yep.
And what was that relationship like? And how was he an ideal man? And how did he influence ERB with his upbringing? And as we know, Major George Tyler Burroughs was a major source. He was a military man, and he believed in structure, and he believed in really being involved in his community, and he was extremely active. And ERB saw all of that in a protective manner, you know, like making the right choices, working for people, and doing the right things, and always reinforcing that with ERB.
Actually, Major Burroughs made his first fortune in whiskey in Chicago. Then his distillery burned down. So he said, okay, no big deal. And he went and he founded the American Battery Company and promptly made his second fortune. So ERB grew up as a rich kid. Mm-hmm. He did not lack for resources. And though he likes to talk about how much he was close to his mother, his dad indulged him. He needed money, he got it. He was in some sort of problem. Daddy paid for to get him out of it. So, or pulled military strings. But yeah, so dad would have been a role model. That he would have been very much an ideal man in little Eddie's eyes.
Yep. Another influence, probably even more so than his father, was General Charles King.
Yeah.
We have a quote.
We do, but hold on a second here. General King, General Charles King, 1844 to 1933, he was considered a pillar of the Army. The man served for 70 years. He took place at all the big battles of the time, the Philippine Uprising, of course the Civil War, Spanish-American War. He trained troops for World War I. So he was very active, but in 1892, he took a brief assignment at the Michigan Military Academy. And there just so happened to be a young man who was sent to military school because he always got in trouble at home, who proceeded to always get in trouble at school. And when he came back from running away one time,
romance novels.
Charles King basically said, yeah,
when he was out west,
I know, you need to have some sort of punishment,
And in fact, he wrote Irwin Porges, over 250 short stories.
He also edited,
although he remained at the academy,
all the good editor things
for
he
only
did.
A brief period,
he was firm invented the Western
justice
romance.
And consideration and his numerous
and
accomplishments
a little bit.
Created in Ed an intense admiration.
So based on
for
these
which was
influences, based on
work.
What was going on in society, and based on his own process of growing up and his own experiences, we've gone through several of the novels, obviously, and we've come up with a list of our ideal characteristics that ERB infused with all the characters. Mm-hmm. So here they are here.
Yep.
So now, we're not saying this is everything. We're saying this is probably just our perspective coming from our own experience with ERB. So here's our characteristics.
And we're going to be talking about five of Burroughs' heroes. Mm-hmm. Tarzan, John Carter, Carson Napier, Norman of Torn, and Waldo Emerson Smith Jones.
My favorite relation. And my favorite. Okay, so we've got physical presence. obviously tall stature, you know, always good looking, very athletic, a lot of physical attributes, intellectual.
I mean, every single one of Burroughs' heroes learned some sort of language in about 5 minutes so that he could communicate. It didn't matter what it was.
No, exactly. Emotionally reserved. Mm-hmm. They weren't very, you know, communicative in that. They weren't like, you know, soft and warm, fuzzy women, emotional thing,
if
men.
If you wanted to see emotion from John Carter, good luck.
Yeah.
If you wanted to see emotion from Tarzan, threaten his wife. He was very jealous. Carson of Venus, he's a little different though. So.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. They were all leaders. They were all respectful of women. They all had strong moral codes, and they were all above all protectors. So those were the majority of the virtues and the attributes that we have identified. So we're going to first of all talk about Mr. Tarzan of the Apes.
John Clayton, Lord Greystoke.
Mm-hmm.
Tarzan was an example of an uncorrupted man. He actually had zero European influence in his life until he was probably in his early 20s. The only other human beings he saw were cannibal tribes in the jungle. So he was not influenced by decadent European culture or Western culture ever until he was found out to be Lord Greystoke. He was by necessity athletic and self-sufficient. And he had to learn some tricks that some people never have to learn, but that's part of being a hero, I think. As the scion of an aristocratic English family, his genetics made him superior. That I made air quotes. And many of his actions, his way of thinking, etc., were almost instinctual due to his bloodline. Bloodline is a very important concept in Edgar Rice Burroughs' writings. He was definitely a believer in nature over nurture, and that's what Tarzan showed. But of course he was a leader. He protected Jane. He protected their little party. But his bloodline was so good that he easily adapted to European life when it came to that. Just nothing, you know, he didn't have to have years of therapy or anything to. But he went right in, sat in a seat at the House of Lords and said, okay, let's get this going.
So most of you know, this is the first cover, this is the first time that he was actually appeared, and that was the 1912 All-Story Pulp Magazine. And then we've got the cover for the 1914 book there. And I always find it really interesting that they just used just like a black version of, like, you couldn't see any of the details. Could it be any man? Could it be just this mysterious person that just existed in the jungle? That's what ERB wanted. So we're going to show you a couple of renditions of him throughout the development over the past 100 years. This was done by St. John, and it shows another version of him where he's lean. And he's not very, you know, muscular. He doesn't seem to be like an overwhelming presence, but don't get him mad. So
don't make the scar go, guys, please.
Yeah, exactly. And then we've got one of our favorites, Forrest Vallejo. And that shows, that's Neil Adams. I'm sorry, Neil Adams. Yep, both of them did the. So this is Neil Adams when he was angry and being very much of a protector. And we've got there another version where he's a little bit more cut.
Neil Adams.
Yep, Neil Adams. And then finally, one of our most favorite is Joe Jesko.
We love Joe Jesko.
Yeah, we love Joe Jesko.
And please notice. Yeah,
it is. Yes, exactly right.
Please notice that in Jesko's renditions of Tarzan, the man is cut. Mm-hmm. Every muscle is defined. He could walk into Mr. Universe and win, just naturally. And as you see, and we're gonna, you have a couple more, don't we?
Just,
yeah. Okay. And as we see, even in the movies, We started out with a guy. He was a swimmer. Donnie Wussmeiler was a swimmer. And so he had that smooth body, not a lot of muscles, but he was a hottie in his day. don't think that girls didn't go to the movies to take a good look at Johnny Wussmeiler in a loincloth. Come on.
Yeah.
But as movies grew and as they progressed, as the times progressed, we get...
Yeah. But this does bring up another question. So we've got one version that was shown through the movies, and then we have another version that was thrown in that was actually developed in the novels. So we're really exploring that the development of the ERB character, mm-hmm. not necessarily of the movies, because Ideal Man, again, just like we said in the beginning, there's many different interpretations and philosophical conversations that go on with this.
And many women went to see this because Alexander Skarsgård is another hottie.
Yeah.
But even this, that's not a Jusko painting. Jusko, he's big, he's Schwarzenegger. Here, he's a little more slimmed down. He looks like he would be swinging through trees. He didn't need that extra weight. So he's a slimmer version of what, like, Joe Jusko paints him as.
So we're going to move on.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Firme y adelante.
Okay, let's do it. Let's talk about John Carter.
John Carter of Mars. John Carter is an ageless man. He had no idea how old he was. And he was probably, and yes, he was immortal. But he was a southern man of southern aristocracy. So his morality, his treatment of women, his leadership qualities were all part of his life as a gentleman. It was imposed on him. It was taught to him if he ever was a young man. But it was part of the Southern soldier right after the Civil War. And so he would have had a lot of these traits naturally simply because he was a Southern gentleman. He grew up in the saddle. He was a good horseman. He was a good sharpshooter. If you ever notice in ERB, there are a lot of horses. Because Ed loved horses.
Yes, he did.
And there's also a lot of riding of things. So, you know, most figure out how to ride whatever animal needs to be ridden. Yeah. His idealness fits in on Barsoom. Once he learns the language and customs, his good breeding allowed him to easily adapt to Barsoomian culture, so much so that he became Jeddak of Jeddaks.
Another leader.
Mm-hmm. And not just to the folks who looked like they were human. He and Tars Tarkas had a wonderful relationship working together. And he's about as far from a Heliumite as you can get.
And this is the most recent cover done by Joe Jusko for A Princess of Mars, which I'm sure all of you have seen it.
John Carter of Mars really should not be super muscular because the gravity on Mars is a lot less than it is on the pool is less than it is on Earth. Yeah, he'd have muscles, he'd be hot, but he would be slimmer and he would be, but very agile.
So we're going to move on again.
Yes, move on.
Ready? All right. We're going to go to talk about Carson.
Carson Napier. Napier actually, as in his youth, trained in the mystic arts. He had a guru who taught him some really fine tricks. One of them being projection of his image mentally. That's how he talked to Ed in his office, was he would project himself or he would show up or he would leave a message for him in the dimensional world, more or less.
He actually visited the office and I got to meet him too.
Woohoo!
There's a comic book out there, yeah. Yeah.
Girl.
Uh-huh. Yes. It was very exciting.
His dad was a major in the army. That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
In the Indian Army. His mom was a Southern Belle. And when they passed away, Carson took the money because, you know, guys in India made bank and they were wealthy. He took his money and he tried really hard to have a misspent youth, but he didn't like it. he really did not like all the partying and the wildlife, and he decided to take his money and his obvious intelligence, very intelligent man. He took it and he wanted to do something that he wanted to do, which was fly to Mars. Why not? He missed, by the way.
Yeah. That's one thing that's different about Carson, is that he has a little bit of a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And as far as the characteristics, he may not be exactly at the very top of the levels for intelligence, however.
Well, I think he was very intelligent. He did put the rockets and everything together. But
did.
His social intelligence was lacking. He probably was on the spectrum if we're going to psychoanalyze him.
Not that we're qualified.
Not
or anything.
That we're qualified, yeah.
No,
but
no.
But Carson was very intelligent. He just was awkward in social situations.
Yeah.
But he could laugh at himself, and he and Duare laughed often. And that was something you would never see with John Carter or Tarzan, that they would, you know, gleefully laugh with their spouses. But,
okay,
yeah,
we're moving on.
We're moving on.
We're moving on. All right, the next one, Outlaw of Torn.
Outlaw of Torn. I really liked this book. This was the second novel that Burroughs tried to sell after A Princess of Mars. He had some issues. It actually wasn't released until much later, but it was his second attempt at a novel. Norman of Torn was, he's also known as Prince Richard because, well, yeah, that's where he was, that's what he was born. He also used the name Roger de Conte when he was out trying to be mysterious. He was a child kidnapped by a villain and reared away from his natural habitat. That, of course, being the court in London. So, I mean, he was only 3 when he was kidnapped. His kidnapper, whose name, by the way, is Deville, yeah, teaches him only 3 things to start, starting when he was 3 to 5, and that was swordsmanship, French, and hatred of the English. Deville was the fencing master the court of his dad, and he was offended. So you know how Frenchmen in medieval times were, right? I shall be avenged. So he kidnaps Prince Richard. Norman has a lot of native intelligence, and we see this. He actually, when wandering about in Torn, he finds a priest who is living as kind of a semi-hermit, but he was in the area. And Father Cloud really liked him, kind of took him under his wing, taught him how to read and write, both in French, in English, and in Latin, and taught him some things that maybe he missed when he was with Deville, because Deville basically said, the only future for you, dear sweet Norman, is hanging on the end of a rope as an outlaw. And he told him this all the time. But Father Claude had him see that there was a future for him, and it wasn't necessarily that. And Norman becomes the best fighter in England. He surpasses his master, which was, yeah. And he is innately respectful of women. Father Claude helped a little with that. But, and it's very unlike Deville, who murdered several women, Lady Maud, his nanny, including his own sister, while kidnapping Richard. And his innate moral code and intelligence are expanded upon by Father Claude, but once again, bloodline. He was royalty. He couldn't act except in a noble way. And in the end, he actually kind of decides that the English aren't so bad. He falls in love with his biological father's best friend's daughter. So, you know, Bertrand. And yeah, that kind of changed him and pulled him to the English side. So the French thing was actually in love and superficial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Waldo, I say it wrong every time. Waldo Emerson Smith Jones, no relation. He was a young man suffering with the societal scourge of degeneration. Waldo Emerson Smith Jones is the poster child for degeneration at the beginning of last century. Very much a morality story. It's very much a, oh, hey, look, he's degenerate, he's tied to his mommy's apron strings, he's a Boston intellectual, but can't do anything because he's a Boston intellectual. He doesn't have any useful skills. He's terrified of everything. So until he meets Nadara. Now, Nadara thinks he's awesome. She's right. Like, oh, right. Yeah, and you know, I can help. She says, let me help you. So it was tutelage, and then it also was, she was teaching him skills that he needed to live on this deserted island, or desert island, she had a lot of faith in him. And in one point, he actually had to separate from her and go on his own and hone his skills in order to fully become an ideal man.
He hadn't embraced it at the time. You know, he was still just a really nervous person and just suffering from culture shock and being in a totally different place. And he was just frightened over the smallest things. And he just didn't know what direction he needed to go. And finally, when he had some soul searching and he got away from her and he kind of like figured out what his path needs to be, he made a decision, he made a choice. And I think that's what a lot of the ERB characters had to do. The male characters were forced to make a decision. Which way are you going to go? Are you going to become that ideal man and fulfill all of your potential? Or are you going to just cave in and just let life take over? And they did. They chose to stand up and take control. And through all these characteristics, good old Waldo, he becomes Thandar. And he, again, is... his physical presence totally changes. This is one of my most favorite stories because it's the biggest transformation in one of the characters that I'm aware of. He goes from just this weakling to like a man of power, and it's just incredible to read the whole, you know, transfer. It's his whole decision making process as to how he grows and how he becomes and he fulfills, and it's really inspiring actually. Mm-hmm. It shows his intelligence. He takes over as a leader of her people. He's emotionally reserved, of course, because he's still figuring things out and he doesn't want to be vulnerable. You know, I think that's another really big important characteristic of a lot of the ERB male characters, the heroes. They don't want to be vulnerable. They are definitely reserved, and they're leaders. They're respectful of women. He goes above and beyond to protect the women. He's got a strong moral code. He always is fighting for the good. And of course, he's a strong protector of all animals and all things that are right.
And so. He scared his mama when they came and found him. She's just like, who's that? He actually was on the ship going somewhere to, he thought he had tuberculosis, so he was going for the cure. Right. What he really suffered with was a really bad case of...
I think his mom was over-medicating him.
What is it? Psychosomatic? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was maybe like her problem. You know, like if you heard these
women. Oh, she coddled that boy?
Yes, I think it was a problem with her.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not going to disagree.
Yeah, I think that, So those were just a couple of images of one of our favorites, Waldo.
I've got a couple of perspectives from people who are authors or were authors. First off, there is an author named Nathan Long. You might have heard of him if you game it all, because he writes a lot of Warhammer universe stories. However, he just came up with something based on John Carter and his love of John Carter, but as a female protagonist. And Jane Carver of War. Yes. But anyway... he said, and we do not agree with this.
No, we do not.
I don't think we agree with this at all.
It's actually really shocking when you told me about this.
No. That's not the right one.
Oh,
but this
okay.
one
this
is,
one.
Yeah.
This is a different one.
They, Burroughs' heroes, are all pretty much interchangeable.
Right.
Tarzan and Mars would be John Carter, and John Carter in the jungle would be Tarzan. Mm. We say no.
Right.
Why? Because Tarzan, without all of his experience as a child, learning to adapt, learning to take care of himself, learning to be self-sufficient, would have made him into Tarzan. He needed that experience. John Carter just kind of jumped into Mars and went, hey, I'm here. Look, I can jump really high. He being, having no idea how old he was easily able to slip into Barsoomian society because he had the experience. Okay, he was a gentleman. Tarzan couldn't have done that. And I really don't think, you know, Carson of Venus, no. Okay, but believe it or not, Gore Vidal was a big, big fan of Tarzan, read him when he was a kid, revisited him, and wrote an essay in Esquire, Tarzan Revisited. December of 63, if you want to go over and look for the Esquire that had this in. But Vidal really loved Tarzan. He, and Edgar Rice Burroughs. He said, no matter how difficult the adventure, Tarzan, clad in only a loincloth with no weapon save a knife, wins against all odds and returns to his shadowy wife. I think we proved to all of you last year that there was no such thing as a shadowy wife. Jane was quite the girl. As far as we know, she still is. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is this one, and I'm going to read this, and I want you guys to listen, and I want you to let this sink in, okay? This is also Gore Vidal from the same essay, and he said, these books are clearly for men. I have yet to meet a woman who has found Tarzan interesting. No identification, as they say in series land. We beg to differ. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One other thing, Kathy.
Yes.
Do you think that someone who was not an ideal man, Waldo doesn't even count, but do you think a man who wasn't quite ideal, could he become ideal?
Absolutely, I think so.
Yeah, let us bring up one William Cecil Clayton III, mm-hmm. who was Tarzan's cousin, though they didn't know it. And William was engaged to Jane Porter at the time when this all went down, but Jane and Tarzan had already fallen in love and honor and all that good stuff, so she had to marry William. But when they were attacked in the little treehouse on the beach next to the ocean, William Clayton fought to protect not only Jane, but the rest of the party. And he took charge. And I do believe that in his dying moments, he became an ideal man. He met the criteria. He may not have had long to actually use it, but he died an ideal man just because of what he did and how he acted nobly at the beginning of the Return of Tarzan. It makes me a little verklempt, I'm sorry.
Do you need a hug?
Yes.
Okay. There you go.
So that's what we have for you.
Yep.
Anybody have a question or two? We sincerely hope that you have a really excellent Pulp Fest, and that if you do have a question or if you want to talk Edgar Rice Burroughs,
here we are. Yeah, we always appreciate it. We love having conversations with you and hearing your perspectives, and we just like exploring this because it's so close to our hearts, and mm-hmm. and even though, you know, I mean, last time when we did it, we got a lot of compliments, and mm-hmm. we actually really enjoyed ourselves.
We had a great time.
Yeah, we had a great time.
I had a great time tonight.
So did I.
Yeah. We're always willing and able to talk about this.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
I was interested, it's a very good presentation. I liked it very much. When you were talking about the influences on Edgar Rice Burroughs, and I was thinking about some of the literary influences beyond the cultural.
Mm-hmm.
And I just finished rereading Ivanhoe.
And he would have read Ivanhoe. He went
to figure because all your criteria were matching everything that was
he went. Book. He went to Harvard public in Harvard School in Chicago, private school, and yeah, he had to learn all of that stuff, English and literature and Latin and all of that. So yes, he would have had other literary influences, absolutely. But, and I say this lovingly, you know, but General King, being a novelist, writing stories, would have later in his mind think, because he was reading the pulps and he said, man, these are just like the dreams I have, what I think to myself before I go to bed, before I go to sleep. And I think that when he read and said, oh, I could write, I could do better than this. But because one of his heroes was a prolific, very well-known author, once again, one of those authors that we've lost because time, I think that let him actually write. That there wasn't any stigma about writing a romance, there wasn't any stigma about writing whatever. The man invented Sword and Sandal. Sword and Planet. And as romances. So, yeah, literary, absolutely. Not sure what he studied, but they had he had a very comprehensive education. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, awesome question. Thank you. Yes?
So there's an attribute that at least some might ascribe to the ideal man, and that would be fatherhood, which Tarzan and John Carter both end up in. You didn't really talk about in Burroughs' fathers. And how does that play into the notion of an ideal man?
Well, I think that comes a lot under protector. That it's kind of an umbrella that will cover them being fathers. But like we said, with two huge father figures in his life influenced how he saw the world. It was, and yeah, thank goodness for General King. He wasn't there very long, but he inspired Ed. I had to punish him a lot, but the kid was rocking.
He did it lovingly.
He would be, yeah, we think he had ADHD. But yeah, being fathers, of course. Yeah, because one of my favorite Tarzan novels is not a Tarzan novel. It's Son of Tarzan. So, but yeah, I can see that.
Definitely.
And like
definitely.
We said, these are traits we came up with. That's between she and I.
I'm sure there's a lot of other characteristics
more.
That could apply.
Tons more.
But in my opinion, too, when you look at Tarzan and John Carter and how they were off on their own adventures here and there, and they were doing other things too. They weren't always that doting father or that helicopter parent that you see these days. So I'm not quite sure, but I think that that does fall under the protector kind of theme. Definitely.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
We got here late. You might have covered this. I wondered, what kind of cultural door did you two come in to get on this bus?
My story is long. When I was a little girl, my parents would take us to see my great-grandmother, my dad's grandmother. And, of course, I would get bored because I like to do stuff. And one day I asked my grandma, I said, Grandma, if I'm really, really careful, could I read the books in the barrister bookcase in the living room? And she said, yes, just be very, very careful. The first book I pulled out was Tarzan of the Apes. Started reading it at 8 and never really stopped. I must credit my husband because he got me into John Carter of Mars, and that just, it just snowballed from there.
They even have cats named after ERB characters.
I have,
yes, do.
My big fat Tuxie, his name is Carter John Jones. And then our little girl, Smokey Gray, she's beautiful, but her name is Deja Thoris Jones. We also have two other cats. I did not name them, so.
You all named Sandra.
We were watching Buffy at the time. Come on.
We're not talking about that.
No, we're not talking about that.
No, we're not talking about that.
So,
well, for me, my mom actually started working at the corporation, Edgar Rice Burroughs Incorporated, in 1976. and she was working for Manpower, which was, at the time, she was a temporary secretary. She was there for 4 days, and it turned into 40 years. So Marion Burroughs was the boss at the time, loved my mom, and made her, you know, stay on and offered her the full-time job. So my mom happily took it because it's just such a great, great job. It's not like work, because every day is different. There's so many opportunities. I was talking to somebody about that earlier, how like every day is a little bit different. And because he created so many different genres, there's so many different opportunities, and it's just the world is just open. So I was in high school at the time, and they needed somebody in the warehouse. We kept getting like loads of boxes from all over the world of comic books and books and all these things. And I was working with Danton at the time. So Marion said, "You got a daughter, you need to bring her in so she can work part-time in the warehouse." That was my start. So from there, I was like, what is this Tarzan of the Apes stuff? I love to read, but I started with Nancy Drew back in the day.
So who didn't?
I know, right? I mean, so I cracked open the Tarzan of the Apes book and started reading, and I couldn't put it down. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is so fun. So I just started reading through, and I worked with Danton, who was the grandson of Edgar Rice Burroughs. So I got to learn so much from him and experience, like, you know, what it was like to be in that world. And it just, I love it. It's so fun. So I worked there for years and years and years. I got through college. Then for a little while, I got my bachelor's, my master's degree, and I went and I was a teacher, first grade for 5 years. And in 2000, I came back to Burroughs, and I've been there ever since. Now I'm the VP of operations, and I'm, you know, Jim's right-hand man, and I love it, and you know, looking forward to just keeping moving forward and doing more. So that's my story.
I keep telling her I want her job.
No, you may not have it. No, it's mine.
California sweetheart.
I can do remote. I can work remote.
No, you may not. So anyway, that's about us.
And, that's us. Yeah.
We just love, like, you know, digging into it and finding like other themes that kind of are intertwined in all of his stories, and whether it be the women of ERB, because that's just such an untapped real topic that needs to be explored, or whether it's about the heroes, or maybe it's about the villains. We don't know.
Yeah.
No, yeah, more questions. More questions.
We have
more questions.
Yes, we have us. We're glommed onto villains. I'm sorry.
Did you have a comment, Mike?
Villains.
Mike always.
Oh, I'm not sure. Yeah. So anyway, more to come.
Yeah.
You have to keep coming back.
Absolutely. Because as long as there's a Pulp Fest, I think we'll be here. Or as long as we're here, we'll come to Pulp Fest. So,
but we all appreciate you. Love talking
yes,
with you all.
Thank you so much.
And come and visit us, and we're around. So thank you.
Oh.
You've been listening to Pulp Tales, fascinating stories of the pulp magazines and the creative minds that brought them to life. Brought to you by The Pulp Net. Learn more about the pulp magazines through articles, blogs, bibliographies, links, over 100 episodes of this podcast, and much more at The Pulp Net. Your link to the pulp magazines for almost 30 years. Online at thepulp.net. Subscribe to Pulp Tales on your favorite podcast platform or listen to us on the web at The Pulp Net. If you enjoy our content, please like us or leave us a review. And tell your fellow pulp fans about Pulp Tales. Thank you for listening, and keep reading the pulps. Pulp Tales is copyright 2025 by William P. Lampkin.